How do you make space for lattes, wardrobe upgrades, and hair blowouts without derailing your financial security, savings, and future goals? If you're asking yourself this question, you're in the right place. Hey, I'm Sophia, a Vancouver-based podcaster and the founder of In Her Wallet, a financial education and guidance company on a mission to enable women to take lasting control of their finances by leveraging the insights of behavioral psychology. And this podcast is your guide to financial success, equipping you to live your best life without sacrificing your financial future. In today's episode, we're diving into a topic that's super relevant to us young women navigating our prime earning years, and that's credit cards. They are not just a piece of plastic that we use for shopping. They are actually powerful tools that can either boost our financial wellness or sneakily undermine it. If you've ever wondered what banks are not telling you about these cards or might not make it so easy to understand about how to best use them and also how to pick the perfect one for your lifestyle and goals, this is the episode for you. Joining us today is an expert in the field of credit cards, Shannon Terrell from NerdWallet. Shannon brings a wealth of knowledge and insights to help us navigate the complex a world of credit cards. So whether you're looking to earn rewards, build credit, or simply manage your spending better, this episode is packed with valuable tips and strategies. Let's dive in and discover how to make credit cards work for you and not against you. Shannon, welcome to In Her Wallet podcast. We're very excited to have NerdWallet and you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Sophia. Excited to be here.
Let's start with some rapid-fire questions. I do that with every guest so we get to know you a bit better. Tell me, if you look back on your life, what's the best purchase you've ever made?
So I don't know that I could call this the best purchase I've ever made, but over the past 6 months, one thing does stick out. I invested in a steam cleaner for our home, and I can't describe how satisfying it is to use this machine and to just have the carpets come out so fluffy and white again. So highly recommend for those folks considering it.
I have never heard of that, so I will be checking it out after our recording. My next question for you is, I think in every budget, there is a guilty pleasure. Do you have one and what that is?
I do, and I actually engaged in this guilty pleasure just yesterday. So my guilty pleasure is food delivery, especially, you know, here in Toronto, in the GTA. It's snowy, the weather is awful, and it's just so nice to indulge every once in a while and get some food delivery sent straight to your door.
I feel you there. I do that sometimes as well, especially on the weekend. And Shannon, my final question here is, if you look back on your life, what's a major financial milestone you've achieved? It can be big or small, that made you feel like a total money boss in your life.
I think what stands out to me is finally paying off my student debt. So I was in school for quite a while, actually, as both a full-time and part-time student. So I was juggling multiple student loans. And so the day I finally paid those off, there was definitely a bottle of champagne involved. We're pretty excited.
I love that. Congratulations. That's definitely a big milestone.
Thank you.
Shannon, today we're talking with you about credit cards and how to choose the right one for yourself and some of the things that banks might not emphasize to us as customers when we're selecting them. So I want to start our conversation with things to know before you apply for a credit card. Can you tell us, are there any key financial factors that one should consider before applying for a credit card?
Definitely. So the first thing is understanding your financial goals. Why do you want a credit card? So a credit card is really a financial tool, and we have to know what we want to build before we pick up the tool, right? So my first piece of advice is consider what you want your credit card to do. My second piece of advice is to know your credit score. So a good credit score, and that's typically considered to be a score of 670 and above, that can qualify you for higher tier credit cards. You know, you don't want to go into the application process blind. So having that better idea of your credit score and your credit history, that's going to help you make the informed decision about the type of credit card that you target. How do you access your credit score? Well, Equifax actually allows you to access your credit report online for free, and it's usually updated monthly. And there are actually some online banking services that let you access your credit score, including CIBC, RBC, and BMO. And the last thing I would say before we enter into this process is we really want to understand the impact that a credit card can have on our finances. You know, it's something that can help or hurt your credit score, depending on how it's used. So it's something we want to think about before we start to explore these options. We also want to consider any existing debts and liabilities and analyze our current financial obligations just to make sure that we can effectively manage any additional credit.
Shannon, one small question pops up in my head, and I really want to break this myth. I feel like a lot of people think that when they try to check their credit score online themselves, it might affect their credit score. Can you help us understand whether it does or whether it's just the hard inquiries by banks?
Exactly. So you touched on it right there, the hard credit inquiry. When you apply for new credit products, including credit cards, that will result in the hard credit pull. And that's what's going to impact your credit score. But it will only typically impact your score by a few points. And eventually, it's something that's going to drop off your credit report, typically in about 2 years. So again, when we're looking into our credit score and accessing it online, especially if we're doing it through our online banking platform, that's really not something we need to worry about impacting our credit too much. We can do this safely. And again, this is information that's ultimately going to help us in our pursuit of applying for a new card.
Great. So now let's talk about the different types of credit cards. I feel like it's easy to get overwhelmed because there is cashback, there is travel, there are business cards. Can you help us understand the different types of cards and how to choose the best one that suits your needs?
Yes. So you're exactly right. There are so many different types of cards on the market. So generally, we categorize credit cards based on the feature or reward that they offer. So we could have prepaid cards, secured cards, business cards, the list goes on. How do we figure out which of those categories is right for us? Well, first and foremost, I'll circle back to thinking about what we want to get out of the credit card, as I mentioned. Now, let's assume we've done this thought exercise and we determine that we want a rewards card. So even within this credit card category, there are so many options. We have travel cards, points cards, cashback cards. So the next step here is to start thinking about your spending habits. So where do you typically spend the most? Ideally, we want to get a card that's going to match our spending habits so that we can maximize the rewards that we receive. The other thing I would urge people to consider when they're looking at a rewards card are the redemption options. So if we're buying into a rewards program, we want to know how we can redeem those rewards. You know, there's lots of major programs in Canada, Air Miles, Aeroplan, Scene Plus, American Express, membership rewards, the list continues. We want to look at the type of reward that's optioned, how it's redeemed, and then if it's a program ultimately that we want to participate in.
Shannon, are there any specific credit cards on the market that are created to help us achieve financial goals?
Yes, absolutely. So let's, for example, take a look at a few different financial goals. Let's say we are a budding entrepreneur and we want to build our business credit profile. A strong match for that financial need is a business credit card. Let's say we have struggled with debt in the past and we want to try and rehabilitate our credit. A secured credit card may help there. These are cards that don't typically require a credit check, but instead they require a security deposit to secure the card, hence the name. Another option would be for students or newcomers to Canada. So there are cards that are specifically designed for students and newcomers. Again, they either don't require the credit check, or they have more lenient eligibility criteria, and they are specifically designed to help these people get their foot in the door and start with their first credit card and building up that credit history. So no shortage of categories on the market, and honestly, something for just about everybody and every financial goal.
So the keys to really evaluating what your goals and your spending habits are, whether it's more important for you to get the cash back or if you're an avid traveler, choosing a card that helps you earn air miles and get benefits from using a credit card in that way. Shannon, can you explain how rewards programs work in general and what factors someone should consider when evaluating them?
Sure. So again, you know, these rewards programs come in all shapes and sizes. We have some that are specifically geared towards travel, and then we have the more generic points programs like Aventura and Scene Plus. So when we're looking at the rewards programs, there are a few different factors to consider. We sort of already touched on spending categories, but in that line, we also want to think about spending caps. So, you know, we tend to see this more often with cashback cards. Say we get a 3% reward rate on money spent on groceries, but that might be capped at $10,000 annually, which means once you've spent the $10,000 on groceries for the year, you might not actually earn any more rewards. Now, beyond spending caps, we want to look at the redemption options. As I mentioned, how and where can we redeem the rewards? Is there a certain point threshold that we have to hit before we can cash in the redemption? And then finally, sort of the caveats to some of these rewards programs would be the blackout periods and the expiration dates. So the blackout periods, we see a little more with the travel cards. Now, a blackout period might stop you from being able to redeem your points for a flight or for accommodations within a certain time period. And believe it or not, there are some points that will expire if they're not used within a certain period of time. For example, Aeroplan points expire. Takes 18 months of account inactivity to get there, but they do in fact expire. So again, something to keep in mind when we're looking at the rewards programs.
Shannon, are these details usually easily accessible on the credit card website page, or would they be, is it something that you need to go into the bank and talk to a teller about?
So with the rise of online and digital banking, a lot of this information is available online, although you may need to dig a little bit to find it. So legally, these credit card providers do need to disclose all of the rules and regulations of the rewards programs to potential consumers. Now, you might need to scroll all the way to the bottom of the page and expand the legal terms and conditions and scan through that fine print to find them, but rest assured they are there. You just have to know what to look for.
Got it. That's good to keep in mind. My next question is, can you share any strategies to maximize rewards without accumulating unnecessary debt on your credit card?
Definitely. So the reality is that credit cards, while a useful and accessible form of credit, they do carry the potential for debt, and it can be a slippery slope. So how do we avoid the credit card debt spiral? Well, if we want to maximize rewards, one thing that we can do is take advantage of welcome bonuses. So many rewards credit cards come with a welcome bonus when you first sign up. The bonus typically comes in the form of points. So for example, when I signed up for my TD Aeroplan card, there was a welcome bonus of 50,000 Aeroplan points. Sounds pretty good. But the catch is you don't necessarily get the points just for signing up. You typically need to fulfill some form of eligibility criteria to unlock the bonus, usually spending a certain amount of money in a set period of time. But luckily, these thresholds tend to be fairly accessible. And sometimes you get the welcome bonus just for making your first purchase with the new card. So welcome bonuses are a solid way to start building up those points.
Are there any other strategies to do that, such as maybe paying your balance in full every month? Would you get any extra bonuses for that? Or using cards for specific expenses that the rewards are added for?
So you won't necessarily get a points bonus for paying down your balance every month. I mean, the main benefit to clearing your balance is avoiding the accrual of interest, because really you're losing money when you start accruing interest on your credit card balance. But you did touch on something else that can be really helpful, and using the credit card for planned expenses can be really advantageous. So by this, I mean avoiding using the card for impulse purchases or non-essential spending. I think that this strategy is especially handy for people who do carry the balance on their credit card, because as I said, it can be a slippery slope. So sometimes it's helpful to only pull that credit card out for a planned expense that you're anticipating and that you have a plan for how you're going to pay that balance down.
Got it. That's a good tip. And my final question, that is with regards to choosing the credit card, is, are there any tools on the market that can help us compare the different credit cards available to us without feeling overwhelmed during the process?
Yes. So NerdWallet Canada is a pretty solid resource for folks who want to compare their credit card options. We have conducted the research to provide in-depth reviews of credit cards and card roundups. So I think that our card roundups in particular are helpful for people who want to compare their card options in one of those specific card categories that we mentioned, like travel rewards, points cards, no fee cards. Outside of this, I would urge people to maybe go straight to the source. So provider websites. It can be helpful to go to these provider websites and, like I said, read through that fine print to know what you're getting into before you apply. And finally, another great strategy is to look for reviews. So user reviews and ratings can be really helpful. And sometimes it's as simple as just plugging in the name of the card plus the word review. That's going to connect you maybe to other consumers' experiences with the card. And that's going to give you a better idea of whether the card is a good fit for your lifestyle and your finances.
Shannon, one question that comes to my mind is, I know these days you can easily apply and get approved online. Is there a difference and maybe advantage to doing that versus an in-person application, or is it more or less the same thing?
I would say more or less you're going to get the same sort of experience applying online. It's going to be the same application process. You're going to be required to submit the same information. And again, that hard credit inquiry will still be pulled whether you apply online or in person. I'd say the advantage to applying online, you might get that response a little bit earlier. So there's pros and cons for sure.
Got it. Thank you for highlighting that. Shannon, now I want to move to the part I'm very excited, and which is to talk about something that banks might not necessarily tell us or might not emphasize our attention on, but that is very important to keep in mind when choosing and using a credit card. And my first question to you is, how does applying for a new credit card affect one's credit score?
Yes. So we've already touched on this, but the hard credit inquiry is performed anytime that you apply for new credit. Hard credit inquiries do generally lower your credit score, but only by a few points. But it's still something worth considering, especially if you are trying to maintain or improve your credit rating. The other way that this might impact your credit is if you are submitting multiple applications. So multiple credit inquiries in a short period of time can have a bigger impact on your credit score. So we might want to exercise caution if we're applying for more than one card at a time. We might want to consider maybe applying for one card, waiting to hear back whether we're approved, and then perhaps submitting another application. The reason that these multiple applications have the impact on your credit score is because it might signal to lenders that you're in some form of financial distress. So definitely something to consider. The other major factor here for a new credit card is that it's going to impact your credit mix and your credit utilization ratio. So over time, hopefully, a new credit card will have a positive impact on our finances as long as we're using it responsibly. But what it does is it's adding to the overall mix of your credit and your credit utilization ratio. So your credit utilization ratio is how much of your overall revolving credit that you're using versus how much you have available. And generally speaking, most financial experts suggest that we try to have a credit utilization ratio of no more than 35%. So that means not using more than 35% of your total available credit at any given time. So again, that new card is going to impact the credit mix and the credit utilization ratio.
Is there a maximum amount of credit cards one should have, or a golden standard for the number of credit cards to have?
I wouldn't say there's a golden standard. Again, the number of credit cards that you carry is going to tie heavily into your spending habits, your lifestyle, your financial goals. It can certainly be advantageous to carry more than one credit card because, as we mentioned, there are a variety of options out there and different cards might suit different financial goals. Again, as I mentioned, though, each new card that we carry, it's going to impact the credit utilization and the credit mix. And ultimately, it is possible to have too much of one thing. If we don't have a healthy mix of credit, if we don't have, say, a personal loan or personal line of credit in the mix, that again can signal to lenders that we are not effectively using all of the credit tools available to us. So definitely approach with caution if you're going to be carrying more than one credit card, but don't be afraid to explore your options.
One reason why I asked you about the number of credit cards one should have is because I started thinking about the fees that credit cards come with. They're not free or not often. Rarely they are. I think only student cards come with very low or no fees at all. So what should individuals know about credit card interest rates and fees before making a decision?
Yes. So the first thing I would say is not all interest rates are created equal. So most credit cards in Canada tend to carry a purchase interest rate of about 19 to 20%, but not all. So in fact, there are some low rate credit cards that offer these purchase APRs that are actually closer to 10%. That could really be worth exploring if you're somebody who typically does carry a balance on your credit card. Now, you touched on the other major factor, which is annual fees. Now, as far as credit card fees are concerned, when we talk about annual fees, this is usually front and center when we're evaluating our options. Fees are pretty common. We can find no fee card options, but generally speaking, the higher the fee, the more luxurious the perks that are involved. Now, whether or not that annual fee is worth paying, that really comes down to whether you can squeeze enough value out of the card itself to offset the cost of that fee. If you can, and you can recoup the cost of the fee, it might be a worthwhile investment.
Is that something that an individual can understand by using one of those credit card online calculators that are available on the card website? Or how would they calculate that cost, whether they can offset the price of the credit card versus the benefits?
That's a great question. So this is something that we dig into for the card reviews that we publish to NerdWallet Canada. It can be really challenging to quantify the value of the rewards or the perks, right? So when we talk about quantifying that, we want to look at the perks that are offered and see if we can maybe conduct a little bit of research and find out how much value that perk is really adding. So one example that springs to mind is airport lounge access. And this can be pretty easy to quantify when you look up the cost of getting into an airport lounge. If your credit card offers airport lounge access or a certain number of passes per year, that can more than offset the cost of the annual fee. Again, whether you're someone who likes to use the airport lounge or not, again, that comes down to lifestyle and your financial habits. So it really all depends.
Shannon, that's a great answer. Thank you for highlighting that for us. Now I want to talk about the hidden fees of credit cards or specific features or terms and conditions that banks might not emphasize at the early stage of selecting the credit card and that customers might often overlook. Are there any like that you can share with us?
Yes. So, you know, we just touched on annual fees. Again, I think this is the fee that most people see front and center when they're looking at a new credit card. but there are some fees that are more hidden in the fine print to be on the lookout for. So the first I would mention are late fees and over-limit fees. So there are often penalties for late payments or for exceeding your credit limit. In fact, over-limit fees can reach as high as $50. So really not something you want to be dinged with. The other fee that a lot of people don't really account for is the foreign transaction fee. So if you're a traveler, you want to check for foreign transaction fees, especially for international use. I think a lot of people like to take their credit card when they're traveling, but they're not aware of the fee that's going to be charged each time they make a purchase in another currency. So we'll typically see the foreign transaction fee expressed as a percentage of the amount that's charged to the card, usually around 2.5%. But of course, there are cards that waive this fee, though they are less common. So maybe something to be on the lookout for if that really matters to you. And the last fee that tends to sort of fly under the radar, a balance transfer fee. So if you are consolidating debt or even just moving an outstanding credit card balance to a new card, we want to be on the lookout for balance transfer fees. Again, this is a fee that's typically expressed as a percentage of the overall amount that's being transferred, usually about 2 to 3%. I wouldn't necessarily call these fees hidden, but they are fees that can impact your day-to-day expenses, and they can be hard to locate in the terms and conditions. So definitely something to be on the lookout for.
Shannon, it's great that you highlighted the foreign transaction fees and the other two, of course, but the foreign transaction fees is something that I've had a negative experience with my first credit card. I used to go back home quite a bit and travel while I was a student. And I didn't realize that I was actually paying, as you mentioned, 2.5% on every transaction I made abroad. So that's definitely something to check with the current credit card you have and with new credit cards that you plan to apply for. Shannon, my next question to you is, should individuals aim for the highest credit limit possible, or is there a more strategic approach to really using the credit card and staying below that credit utilization ratio?
So a higher credit limit can be helpful, but there are drawbacks. Whether or not a higher limit is right for you depends, honestly, on a number of factors, including your current credit accounts. So let's talk about the pros. So a higher limit is going to increase your available credit and could reduce your credit utilization ratio, which is a factor in our credit score. The other pro is that we get a bigger cushion in the event of financial emergency, and we increase our purchasing power, which is great. There are some potential drawbacks to a higher credit limit. So the first is we put ourselves at risk of overspending. We also need to acknowledge that it's going to impact our credit mix. If you have a healthy, diverse spread of credit accounts, having a larger credit limit might not really impact you all that much. But if your credit card is the only form of credit that you carry, you might want to consider some alternative forms of borrowing before you expand your credit limit. So for example, personal loans and lines of credit might be worth considering instead, because you're going to potentially get a more competitive interest rate. And again, we are adding to that diverse mix of credit products in our portfolio, which should ultimately help our credit score.
Great. And Shannon, what advice do you have for someone with limited or no credit history at all?
So we talked about student and newcomer credit cards. I think that these are such a fantastic option for people trying to build their credit history for the first time. And in fact, there are a number of big banks in Canada that offer these cards that are specifically designed for students and newcomers, BMO and CIBC. Definitely. So explore your options. But outside that, we may also want to look at secured credit cards. So as I mentioned, a secured credit card can help you rehabilitate your credit or build your credit history for the first time. They don't necessarily require a credit check, but they do require a security deposit to secure the card. And typically what happens is the card's credit limit becomes the amount of the security deposit. So for example, if you deposit $500, you will have a $500 credit limit on the secured card. The other major takeaway here for people building up their credit is to just try to pay bills on time. So timely payments are key to establishing and maintaining good credit. And I don't just mean your credit card bill. This could be your electricity bill, your phone bill, any other loans that you might have, student loans, car loans. These factor in to your credit score. So keeping up with all of these payments as best we can, all of that is going to contribute to your credit history and improve your score over time.
You started talking about using credit cards, and I really like that. I think paying our bills on time is one of the biggest things that people might overlook when it comes to their credit score. So if we talk about the common mistakes people make when using credit cards, are there any that come across you more often than others, and how can they be avoided?
Yes, the first thing that comes to mind is just failing to explore your options. You know, there are so many cards on the market, and if you've had the same credit card for years, it might be time to switch things up. You know, your financial habits may have changed. You may be in a different life situation than you were before. So don't neglect to explore your options. I was guilty of this one. I held on to my starter credit card for years. It was a no-fee card. I was happy with it. But it wasn't until I did some of the math and realized how valuable a travel card might be in my wallet that I finally made the switch. And I'm really glad I did. Another thing I see, and I do hesitate, I don't want to call this a mistake, but it's just something to be aware of. So just generally carrying a balance on our credit card. Paying interest on your credit card means that you're losing money. So if it is possible for you to pay your balance in full each month, wonderful. If not, we want to strive to at least match and exceed the minimum payment that's required, because only paying the minimum, that's actually going to keep us locked in to a cycle of debt. As we know, credit cards tend to carry quite high interest rates, and if we're only matching the minimum payment, we're really going to find ourselves stuck in that debt spiral.
I always say that unless you know that you can pay this purchase off in full on your credit card, you should not be making that purchase if you can't. So, and that will help you avoid the exact thing that you just mentioned. Shannon, we are closing to the end of our episode. One thing I want to ask you, we're in 2024 now. Are there any emerging trends in the credit card industry that customers should be aware of when selecting new credit cards, or things to look out for in 2024?
So there is one thing that comes to mind. One trend I am seeing right now is just a general rise in credit card debt. So total card balances reached $113 billion in the third quarter of 2023. And that comes from Equifax's Canada Consumer Credit Card Trends Report. Now, this figure is an all-time high for Canadians. I hear stats like this, and while at first worrisome, I have to say that I do understand where these numbers come from. You know, over the last year, Canadians have faced multiple economic headwinds. We've had high interest rates. We've had continued high rates of inflation. You know, does it come as a surprise that we're carrying more debt now than ever before? Not really. But just because it makes sense in the current environment doesn't mean that we are powerless to take control of our finances. And I think saying how prevalent credit card debt has become, now more than ever, we just need to be really diligent about how we use our credit cards and how we manage our ongoing debt so that we can pilot our finances successfully into 2024.
Thank you for wrapping our episode up on such a right note. I think the key to using credit cards is just being responsible with them. Shannon, are there any final tips or recommendations you have for In Her Wallet listeners on how to choose the right credit cards for them?
Ultimately, you want to think about what you want your credit card to do, viewing your credit card as a tool and deriving the most value that you can out of it. Don't rush the decision. You know, this is a commitment that you may have for years. This is a card you may carry in your wallet for years. So take your time, explore all your options, have fun with it. There are some great rewards programs, great perks out there. Just take your time to ensure it's the right fit for you and your finances.
Shannon, what is financial freedom to you? And what do you think every woman should do to achieve financial freedom?
So I think financial freedom looks different to everyone, but in my mind, it's not something that's necessarily tied to a specific salary or net worth. I think ultimately I view financial freedom as having the financial independence to make choices that align with your values and with your goals, and not just financial goals, but your career goals, your personal goals, your life goals. I think it's the ability to pursue your passions, respond to unexpected financial challenges, and hopefully in the future, retire comfortably in a way that lets us step away from work in a way that's meaningful to us in our lives.
Shannon, thank you so much. I loved this answer and I loved everything that you shared with us on today's episode. I appreciate you and NerdWallet joining in Her Wallet podcast, and I hope to see you here soon.
Thank you so much for having us. We hope to come back.
Thank you for tuning into In Her Wallet. If today's episode inspired you or gave you a new perspective, it would mean so much to me if you followed us on your podcasting platform of choice, shared this episode with your friends, and left a 5-star rating and review. I want this episode to serve as a reminder that you're not alone in your financial journey. This podcast is your guide to financial success, equipping you to live your best life without sacrificing your financial future. It was Sophia with you this Wednesday, and I will see you next week.